It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
the Emergency Unemployment Compensation is a 100% federally funded program that permits up to, and those are important words, up to 13 weeks of additional unemployment benefits.
Cheryl Crawford at the Virginia Employment Commission describes the complicated rules about who can get emergency unemployment compensation and how. And in this week's question and answer session, we talk about renter's insurance and why it's probably one type of insurance you want to have. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 25, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom.
And now, this week's news you can use. This Friday, December 5th, is Car Title Loan Rescue Day. Like payday lenders, title lenders offer small loans with high interest rates of 300 to 360% per year. Borrowers give their keys and their vehicle titles to the lending company. If they pay only the minimum amount each month, the interest can reach double the original amount of the loan within 6 to 8 months. If borrowers fall behind on payments, they can lose their car or truck. Because car title lenders are unregulated, no one knows exactly how many exist in Virginia. Religious and consumer groups have identified 113 through Google and online Yellow Pages research. These advocates are asking for the General Assembly to pass a law clarifying that title lenders fall under the Consumer Finance Act, which already caps annual interest rates of 36% for most small loans. To highlight their concerns, advocates will be at Car Title Lenders this Friday handing out flyers that explain car title loans and give a toll-free number to call for more information or for help getting out of a loan. That toll-free number is 1-866-830-4501. In other news, many of us don't realize that the sales tax we pay is skimmed by the retailers who ring up the sales. It's all legal and by the book, but it costs taxpayers in Virginia over $64 million a year, and it keeps that money from going to its intended users. In the first ever comprehensive national analysis of these sales tax diversions, a new report issued last month by Good Jobs First looked at dealer discounts programs originally set up to compensate shopkeepers for the cost and burden of keeping records and transmitting tax revenue to the state. These programs have become dated and have lost touch with the modern economy. They don't give appropriate compensation to small shopkeepers and fail to keep big box retailers from abusing the program and reaping windfalls. The report calculates the loss of Virginia from these dealer discount programs at $64.3 million a year. Like many things in Virginia's tax code, dealer discounts were put in place years ago and need to be updated to reflect modern technology and practices. The study is available at www.goodjobsfirst.org. With this week's news you can use, this is Doris Causey at Central Virginia Legal Aid Society.
Ain't gonna let injustice.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is family and medical leave. Family and medical leave, or FEMLA, means you may be entitled to 12 weeks of unpaid leave from your job, and your job held for you, if you need time off due to your or your family's illness or injury, or to care for a newborn or newly adopted child. To get family or medical leave, you must have worked for your employer for a total of 12 months, and your employer must have at least 50 employees within 75 miles of where you work. Usually you have to give advance notice and medical records if the leave is for illness or injury. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
It's time for the weekly question and answer session here on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3, Richmond's Independent Radio, and we have our questioner with us. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Rhonda, and I'm from Richmond.
Thank you for being on the show. Tell us what's your question for us.
My question is concerning renter's insurance. If you have an incident in your apartment and your landlord expects you to be responsible for their property, but they require you to have renter's insurance for your property, how does that affect you as far as your liability for their property?
Well, Rhonda, that's a good question, and I'll kind of break it into two parts. First, the landlord's property, and secondly, your property. You're not responsible for the landlord's property unless the damage is your fault. I mean, for example, if you give a security deposit, which almost everybody does at the beginning of her tenancy, the landlord can't use that security deposit to cover anything that's reasonable wear and tear. It has to be beyond reasonable wear and tear. And the same thing would apply if the premises were damaged by, you know, fire or water damage or anything like that. Unless you're at fault, you're not responsible for damages to the landlord's property. Now, if the landlord is smart, the landlord's going to have insurance, the way most homeowners have insurance, and that would cover damage that wasn't your fault or really wasn't anybody's fault, whether it was an act of God or something like that, or a vandal or some unknown third party. But certainly you're not responsible for anything that you didn't cause through your own intentional act or your own negligence. Now, having renter's insurance is really a good idea because, unfortunately, the law is that the landlord's not responsible for your property. So if there's a fire on the premises or damage and it's clearly the landlord's fault, the landlord, unfortunately, is not responsible for the damages to your property. That's why it's always a good idea for tenants to have renter's insurance. Renter's insurance is usually pretty inexpensive, and I think it's a really good buy, unlike a lot of other insurance that's offered to people, like, you know, credit disability insurance or credit life insurance, which are pretty much ripoffs. Renter's insurance is really a pretty good idea. Do you have renter's insurance?
Not at the moment.
Are you thinking of getting some?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I think that would be a good idea. And the only other issue I'd raise is that if your landlord, you know, gives you some kind of a lease with some kind of a clause that says you're responsible for damages to our premises no matter what, I certainly would try to bring to the landlord's attention that that's just an unreasonable clause. And if you can't get the apartment without signing the lease, then, you know, you probably will have to go ahead and sign the lease. But I think you could defend the landlord's claim that you're responsible just by saying that that's an unreasonable provision and you objected to it from the very beginning. On June 30, 2008, Congress passed an economic stimulus package that included the Extended Unemployment Compensation Act of 2008. The act made up to 13 additional weeks of benefits available to unemployed people who already had collected all regular state benefits for which they were eligible. On November 21, 2008, another bill was signed expanding emergency unemployment compensation to 20 weeks nationwide. Last month, Cheryl Crawford from the Virginia Employment Commission was at the statewide legal aid conference to explain this rapidly changing law. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there and brings you this special presentation.
I'm Cheryl Crawford. I'm with the Virginia Employment Commission. I'm currently the manager of the Adjudication and Training Center in the central office there on Main Street. Prior to assuming that position a couple of weeks ago, I was the manager of the Benefit Payment and Charging Unit. I had the experience of implementing Public Law 110-252, which authorized the federal extension of unemployment benefits. We call it the Emergency Unemployment Compensation, as opposed to extended benefits. EB, as you may have heard, or extended, is really a state program. The Emergency Unemployment Compensation is a 100% federally funded program that permits up to, and those are important words, up to 13 weeks of additional unemployment benefits for eligible people. It's not an automatic 13 weeks for everyone. The number of weeks is based on the number of weeks that the person was entitled to on his regular unemployment compensation claim. So if he were entitled to the maximum number of 26 weeks, then he would be entitled to 13 weeks. If he were entitled to 12 weeks of basic unemployment, then he would be entitled to 6 weeks. When that was announced in the press, that little detail was omitted, so a lot of people thought they were automatically going to get up to 13 weeks, which just wasn't the case. The law created the eligibility period for all of those whose unemployment claim ended on or after May 5th, 2007 forward. And what that means is anyone who had an unemployment claim established in May of 2006, but whose benefit year did not end until May of 2007 or later, would have been in that eligible pool. So if we had a guy who had 12 weeks of initial unemployment, he filed his claim in May of 2006, he exhausted his UI benefits early August of 2006. So, he may have returned to work, may have had several different jobs, may have gone to a different state, but he was still in that pool of eligible candidates. So that was our reach-back period, as we call it, back to May of 2007. It was effective, and they actually started collecting, effective July the 6th, 2008. The program ends in March of 2009, but they will be able to draw out any benefits that they are entitled to until July the 4th, 2009, if we don't get another extension, and it's starting to look very much like we will. The basic eligibility requirements for EUC, Emergency Unemployment Compensation, the individual had to have exhausted all rights to regular unemployment and no rights under any other federal program in any other state, to include Canada. It was stressed that the individuals had to be legally authorized to work in the United States. Of course, we had screened them prior to EUC. They had to be legally authorized to draw out basic unemployment. But again, we had to screen them to make sure that their visas were still in effect and they were not working on an expired card. They had to have had 20 weeks of full-time covered employment, meaning that's employment that the employer pays into the unemployment tax fund or the equivalent in insured work during the base period. This did not pose any problems for us because in order to minimally qualify for unemployment benefits, the individual would have an equivalent of 20 weeks of covered unemployment to meet our too high quarter test of $2,700. So fortunately, we didn't have to do any gymnastics to try to figure out who had 20 weeks and who didn't, but some states were not as lucky. Well, this says 20 weeks of full-time covered employment or the equivalent in wages. In order to be eligible for the extension, there could be no disqualification on the unemployment claim that the extension would be attached to, and then no subsequent disqualifying event. And they had to meet the regular UI state unemployment qualifications. They had to be available for work, actively seeking work, and willing to accept suitable work when offered. I'm not going to go into the difference in extended benefits as opposed to emergency benefits, but EB, as we call the extended benefits, is a state program that's triggered when unemployment reaches a certain percentage in the state. And then we have additional qualifications or requirements for those people. They have to make a sustained and systematic search for work each week. They have to look for work on different days of the week. If they refuse work or don't meet those requirements, they can be disqualified until they return to work and earn four times their weekly benefit amount. We don't do that with the federal emergency benefits. It's just regular state UI. Whatever was in effect then is what applies.
You're listening to a presentation given last month by Cheryl Crawford from the Virginia Employment Commission about emergency unemployment compensation. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the Virginia Employment Commission's Cheryl Crawford in a presentation given last month about emergency unemployment compensation.
To date, we've mailed out over 75,000 notices to potentially eligible individuals who are on a Virginia unemployment claim. More than 30,000 have returned those applications. And we've paid out more than $48 million in EUC benefits to date. Almost 2,000 people have already exhausted their EUC claims. Now, of the 30,000 that have been returned to us, we identified more than 2,200 separation issues that had to be adjudicated by a hearings officer. They had either worked after exhausting their unemployment benefits, some of them had had several short-term jobs, been terminated or quit, all of those had to be adjudicated to see if they would be entitled to the extension. We've had over 1,000 what we call non-separation issues, the availability issues, pensions, job refusals, transportation, child care, those sorts of issues that have had to be addressed. In order to do that, we've had to bring back some of our retired deputies. We initially brought back five. The workload was so high, five couldn't handle it, so we approved mandatory overtime for our regular adjudication staff to handle EUC separations in addition to their normal workload, which is growing every day. Yesterday, when I left, we had 150 EUC separation cases that we had not assigned to our adjudication staff, and 215 non-separation issues that have to be addressed. Some of the challenges that we faced, since we mailed out the EUC applications, we had some really bad claimant addresses. The population tends to be a bit mobile, so the address on file is where we sent the information. Of the 75,000 that we sent out, we probably got 30,000 back as undeliverable. The claimant limitations, you know, our claimants are, you know, we love them, they're the salt of the earth, but a lot of them don't have the education to read the application, to follow instructions, to fill it out. Maybe they have some visual problems that, you know, they just can't, the print was very small, couldn't see. And they didn't have the interaction with a staff person to clarify points and to look at their claims record that we have in our system to address any potential issues. So we had to put a lot of time into getting those issues straightened out. The reach-back period back to May of 2007 has really been horrendous because, as I said, we've had a lot of people who have picked up part-time jobs, several of them have quit, not realizing that there would ever be such a thing as EUC. and now they're penalized for accepting a job that maybe wasn't the best for them. We had implementation delays. The president signed the law on June the 30th, and I think we mailed out our first applications on July the 12th. So we were making payments from mid-July, but the system had to be programmed. Our system is 25 years old. It's like an old leaky inner tube. Every time you put a patch on one spot, it springs a leak somewhere else. But we are in the process, aren't we, Sam, of designing a new UI modernization system. So hopefully in several years, all of this will be history. Just identifying those subsequent separation and ineligibility issues has posed some problems. A lot of claimants have started drawing pensions since they were first separated. So if it's based on a base period employer, the employer who paid their unemployment claims, it has to be deducted from their EUC. If they were drawing it and didn't inform us of it, then they may be in a situation where they have to pay money back to the state. And, of course, an ongoing problem is just our understaffing and funding constraints within the state and the Employment Commission. We've had quite a few that have called, that have gone into local offices where they live, in the areas where they live, and have asked for applications, and we've been able to get them to them. Well, I heard on the news last night that unemployment is at a 25-year high, and that nationwide they think it will reach about 6.2% by the end of the year. So I expect that we'll have an extension to the extension. So hopefully we've gotten the bugs worked out of the current program so that it'll be a lot easier to get people their money and a lot faster.
You've been listening to a presentation given last month by Cheryl Crawford from the Virginia Employment Commission about emergency unemployment compensation. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
This week's top three tips are about unemployment compensation. The first tip is to not quit your job unless you have good cause and have done everything possible to keep your job before you quit. It's much easier to get unemployment compensation if you're fired than if you quit. The second tip is to actively look for work and turn in weekly claims. You can't get benefits for any week where you didn't turn in a claim. The third tip is to take any suitable job you are offered, even if you lost your old job through no fault of your own. You can't get benefits if you turn down suitable work. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. In October, Virginia saw a tenfold increase in the number of home foreclosures since 2004. How does foreclosure work, and what can you do to avoid it? Join us next week when Jim Nagles at the Virginia Poverty Law Center explains the foreclosure process and possible alternatives. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Winograd.